It is the dozenth episode of Flippers Always Win. I am your host, Flip. Thank you so much for tuning in. Wow, 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 wow. I think that's all everybody was saying after Operation Italy, which is the greatest episode of the new era. The greatest move of the new era, it's definitely up there. It might be the best. There are some other ones that I can think of that strategically were probably on par, but the way that the episode was edited, you've got to give a lot of credit to production for the Ocean's 11 type editing and really just showing how each of Sam, Genevieve, and Andy played their parts to a T. So in terms of pure entertainment, and of course the strategy with it, Rachel saving herself without even knowing it, this is the greatest episode of the new era. This episode reflects the fact that over the past couple seasons, save for a few little speed bump episodes, they've really hit their rhythm. Things are fluid now. Maybe we still have too many powers and change-ups in the game, but things all came together for this episode in a way that I don't think you'd be able to see most of the time in older seasons. We've certainly had great moves. For those of you who've watched the show from the beginning, you know which ones we're talking about here. Some great strategic plays where people get blindsided. But this one does feel like an all-timer, right near, if not at the top. In terms of one aspect of what needed to happen for Operation Italy to occur, which I think is maybe being a little under-talked about, and I didn't even think about until right after the episode, is that Genevieve and Sam each needed to lose the immunity challenges in order for the plan to work, because there would be no split vote if one of them was safe. I don't think they had a problem losing the immunity challenge. It seemed like nobody except for Rachel had any idea what they were doing out there. But it does beg the question, you know, if you're Genevieve or Sam in that situation and you did have a chance to take it home for the win, do you take that chance? And do you say screw it to the plan that could help your long-term game? It essentially says screw it to the other person you're trying to work with. It screws Andy in a way. Would you be tempted to save yourself in that situation, knowing that your game may not be going further? I think for me, knowing how fluid the game of Survivor is these days and how anything can change, you have to take that risk if you did have a chance to win immunity. And that's probably the answer that most people would say. You don't want to get too cute with it. But now that they didn't win immunity, now that Andy has taken their place potentially as the biggest target of the three, it sure did benefit them, I think, in the long term, at least beyond this next vote, more than had they stayed safe for one, the other one goes, and then they're target number one right back there. So sometimes you need a little bit of good fortune in the game. We saw that from Rachel. Even though she earned that fortune, she had no idea she would have been the target again had she not earned that fortune. So a combination of fortune and skill. And for Genevieve and Sam, a combination of fortune and a commitment to the plan and also being bad at that challenge. So that was just one part of what happened there that maybe wasn't even thought about because there was so much going on at the time that your mind was spinning, right? I think that Teenie's next move will decide the winner of this game. You know, Teenie, I don't think, has much of a chance to win here. We'll get into that in a second. Obviously, they've had a string of emotional breakdown episodes, and I think they're still well-liked by the jury and by the tribe. And, you know, that is the one reason they still do have a shot. But ultimately, if Teenie's in the final three, I think as long as they're next to anybody who has a little bit more of a strategic chance to win the game, that they're going to have a tough time convincing people that they're the deserving one when they were the one breaking down constantly out there. But I think Teenie's next move decides the winner. What I mean by that is if Teenie sticks with Rachel at the final six, Rachel has a cakewalk to win the game. Rachel's odds to win the game are sky high. Credit to everybody on this podcast and everybody else who's been saying it the whole season. The first five episodes of this podcast, at least one person predicted Rachel would win every single time. And that is looking really, really, really likely right now. If Teenie sticks with Rachel, Rachel has a block of vote at six and they can just take out whichever of the Andy, Genevieve, Sam that they want, because Sue's going to most likely stick with them. So that'll be a 3-2 vote. Then Rachel's got her idol at five, so she's going to be safe. She's shown herself to be pretty much the best immunity threat out there. So all she has to do is win either the final four immunity or win another challenge at fire. And if she gets to the end of this game, I don't think anybody's going to have enough of a strategic plus social argument to beat her. Andy has put himself into the position, if there isn't a bitter jury and if this move can overtake everything else that Rachel has done, and if he can somehow point out her flaws in the game, which are evident. There are a couple that she, again, unluckily was going to be going home if Saul didn't save her. She was left behind on the Annika vote. She was left behind on the Sierra vote. She would have gone home had she not won immunity. So she hasn't been in control of every vote necessarily, but she's been in the thick of it. She has all these powers that are going to be shown by the end. She's won immunity twice. She's on everybody's good side socially, which is maybe the most important thing of it all. So if Teeny sticks with Rachel and Sue, Rachel's cakewalking to win this game. If Teeny does flip, which I'm not sure why Teeny would, but Teeny's a wild card at this point. Teeny could absolutely do anything. Then Rachel's obviously in trouble. So Teeny's next action, similar to Survivor Gabon 30 seasons ago, actually is what it reminds me of, with Sugar. Teeny plays a little bit of a kingmaker role moving forward, I believe. If Teeny does flip, or if something crazy happens and Rachel actually doesn't get to the final three, I actually think Sam, who has been many people's can't win pick, and I've agreed with them over the course of the season, might have the best chance to win if Rachel's not there. And we'll get into the Andy conversation with our first ever repeat guest, Ashwin, coming up in a second here. Andy, obviously the conductor, the strategist, the mastermind of this amazing move. You got to give him his flowers, but I'm not sure he's done himself any social favors with it. Now, Caroline going back to the jury and saying this was a good move, other people going back to the jury, telling them about what Andy did, certainly can work in his favor. But I think it's a coin flip at best that the bitterness that some of these jury members are going to feel towards him does not outweigh the flowers that he gets for his strategic moves. I still think he's got a great chance if he gets to the end without Rachel. He may even have a chance with her there. But even if it's like Andy, Sam, and somebody else that's not Rachel, I think Sam might have the better odds. I think he's got a lot of friends in that jury. The fact that he wasn't able to piss people off by getting what he wanted in the early to mid part of the jury phase may work in his favor because he doesn't have a lot of people who are mad at him. Sierra, who is there and is on some level likely the queen of Ponderosa, you know, will be in his favor. I remember the episode that Saul got voted out. Saul was talking about how he was impressed with Sam and how he had not blown up after the Sierra vote out. Then Sam tries to help Saul in the game. So I don't think Sam's really upset much of anybody on that jury, really. And if he can find a way to win a couple of immunities at the end, he obviously played a part in Operation Italy. He's a great speaker. He's a charming guy, unless you're Teeny. And I don't know how much the people outside of Teeny were mad about him not bringing them to the reward. It feels like that might have just been a mostly Teeny thing that they were agreeing with. So I don't think that's going to really work against him too much. I'm not saying he's played the best strategic game. I'm not saying that he's the mastermind of really anything out there, although he did have a great pre-merge. I think he's had some things to speak to, and he's charming and affable enough that if Rachel's not there, unless she poisons the jury, because she's the one person that I think he would have pissed off prior to Operation Italy, he might have a real shot. We'll see what happens there. And I think that Genevieve and Teeny have an equally shared lowest chance to win the game, actually, for completely different reasons. Genevieve said at the reward at the sanctuary, when she's reading her letter from home, her husband says, "I'm sure you have plenty of friends out there." And Genevieve says, "And I have no friends out here." Sam asks her on the reward, "What's your spin on your emotionally detached game?" It's just really tough for somebody who admittedly says they have no friends out there, doesn't have the bonds of everybody else, to get into a final three situation and convince them, vote for me, despite the fact that I actively made sure to have no relationship with you and just tried to get you out of the game. I just don't see it. Strategically, she has the chops to win. She is a good speaker, and she's made a lot of emotional pleas in the confessionals at Tribal that show that she has the ability to sway people. She is a lawyer, after all. But I just think ultimately she's actively attempted to not have deep relationships. And that is the biggest hindrance I think you can have out there. It's just hard to see for somebody who really didn't have a number one on that jury at any time, really wanting her to win. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they respect the things that she's done because she's done a lot. Her acting in Operation Italy was fantastic. She's driven votes. It feels like a person who the viewers would want to win, but the people in the game don't feel that way. Teeny, I think it's fairly obvious. I don't think that a lot of people are going to respect the emotional breakdowns. I think she's got a lot of friends in that jury, but compared to some other people who are likely going to be with her in that final three, I just think the breakdowns, the a little bit of immaturity, a little bit of even kind of being a snake, just going from one person to another. I think it's a little bit too much for her to overcome. And then finally, there's Sue, who is on an island, pun intended, as she is on an island. She, I think, actually has like a very slightly better chance of winning the game than Genevieve and Teenie. Not by much. You know, she's been my winner pick from the beginning. So a little bummed that it's not looking great for Sue. Had she played her idol on Caroline, I think that she might have had a path to victory, because that would have been seen as a great move. But she missed her shot there. And I think she'll probably be in the final three unless she loses fire. She's going to need a bitter jury, a really, really bitter jury in order to win this game. She's going to need Rachel to not be there. She's going to need a lot of help. And I think she's also going to obviously need the influence of Gabe and Caroline, which, as close as they were to her in the game, they seem like two very strategic minded players. And I'm not sure that Gabe will go out of his way to vouch for Sue's game. Caroline, I think, is more likely to. But again, she's a strategist at heart. You'd hope, just for the sake of the bond of their relationship, that Caroline would try to drive things for Sue if she's there. But Caroline also may feel like that's a losing effort and say, hey, look, I'm not going to waste my time out here. So I think Sue's one chance is just pure bitterness towards likely Andy, towards likely Genevieve. And even that may not be enough there. It's going to be a cakewalk for Rachel to get to the end, as long as nothing crazy happens, as long as Teenie doesn't flip, as long as Rachel wins one of two competitions at Final Four. And yet, this is Survivor. You never know what's going to happen. Just when you think you've got it figured out, you're wrong. So we'll see. But I'm officially on the Rachel train, which may be bad news for everybody else's, because God knows my predictions are more often wrong than right. But we have a great show coming up. Ashwin is back to talk about Operation Italy. He's fired up. We'll be right back after this message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in lieu of an ad, I would like to talk to you about turning 30, which I did the other day. I turned 30, and now I'm 30. All right, we are back on Flippers Always Win with the first ever repeat featured guest on the podcast. And I think that it really speaks to the spirit of the show that it is Ashwin, who prior to July 4th of this year had not watched any Survivor. And now you are the first returning featured guest. How's it going, Ashwin? Thanks for coming back onto the pod.
It is going great. Thank you for having me, Flip. Really excited to dive in, especially after what happened this week. I was really excited watching it, thinking, wow, this is great podcast fodder.
Just a reintro on Ashwin real quick for those who may have forgotten, although I can't imagine why you would. You remember every detail that is said on Flippers Always Win. Ashwin is the founder of his own company that focuses on AI-powered solutions. But previously, you worked in a role at a different company where your main job was to foster strategic alliances. And obviously, that lends itself well to talking about a show called Survivor. You were very fired up about the fact that this was the first episode that you had watched that truly, I think, to take your words, embodied what it really is to work in a strategic alliance and the little mechanisms, the inner workings that go into it. Before we get into that, I just want to ask you real quick. You started watching in July. You came on episode 4 and you had watched a few seasons. How has your fandom progressed since the last time we talked a couple months ago?
We've watched one, if not two more seasons, and we're just powering through Survivor. And I mean, we're obviously texting you pretty frequently as we see what's going on. We see all the insanity. We're on 28 or 29 right now. The one with John Rocker, Blood vs. Water. It's one of these things where there's so much more Survivor for us to catch up on. And like each season I'm watching, I'm like, yeah, I want more. I gotta get some more Survivor. Avery and I come home and we're like, oh, let's just watch one episode of Survivor. What can go wrong? So yeah, it's become this like really great ritual for both of us to, you know, come home, watch Survivor, dissect what everyone is doing. We watched the previous episode where it was the first time we saw Kelly Wentworth, right? And then this season is like, I guess the first time Kelly was on, it's like, oh, her origin story of some of these people we've seen already. So yeah, it's been really great.
Wentworth's progression is fantastic. She's definitely the model of stepping it up throughout the seasons. And it's awesome that you and Avery have this to bond over, have this little ritual, as you said. You are the monster, the model monster that I would say I've mostly created. I don't want to take all the credit because Avery did watch as a kid. And so it's more of a continuation for her. But for you, you are the model monster. So let's dive right into it. You're fired up about Operation Italy. What is it that fires you up the most?
People are always making alliances and saying this and saying that. But, you know, an alliance and a strategy for that alliance is only as good as the execution, right, of what it is you guys say you're going to do. For Operation Italy, it was a really, really big swing, right, that required a lot of thinking through of, like, the tactical execution. And you oftentimes don't hear all those details, right? Like, who's going to say what? What's the story here? How do you bulletproof all of these various stories that all three of these individuals have to tell other people to not raise suspicion? And obviously, in the real world, you're not trying to, like, avoid suspicion. You're just trying to do a really good job actually doing what you say you're going to do, because that's how you build trust. So it was really cool this week to see Andy and Sam and Genevieve sort of come together and be like, all right, this is how we're going to pull off this big, crazy heist of Survivor.
When you were first watching this develop at the Sanctuary, we see Andy take the lead on it. That's the role that you used to play in a lot of ways, the lead when you're working in strategic alliances. So what did he, from your perspective, do right? What did he do that you connected with in his... And I'll throw this in there. Obviously, Sam and Genevieve were the perfect people for him to do this with because they were the lowest in the totem pole. So it was the easiest group of people for him to work with. But that doesn't mean that it was just a cakewalk for him. So what did Andy do right from the start here?
You know, the very first thing of any alliance is, like, building that consensus and understanding why, like, this is worth the risk. And obviously for Sam and Genevieve, like, they're already on the bottom. It's not like they have much choice. But Andy basically said, like, I'm actually right in there with you, right? Because after you two, you know, I know that they're back at camp plotting how they're going to get me out whenever the time comes. He established the need for this alliance, right? He came with a pretty well-formed idea, right? It wasn't just like, oh, we're all in this position. What are we going to do about it? The hardest part of any sort of plan is, like, that first sort of cut at it, the bones of it. What's the framework of it? What's it going to look like after they ate and the rest of the night? They chiseled away at the idea, right? They came together, but Andy came with, like, a point of view on, hey, this is what I think we can do, right? And then he worked with them to refine it and refine it and refine it. They used the time that they had to figure it all out. The first plan that you come up with is usually not the plan that you're going to execute, but you have to, one, have the trust and the confidence in the people you're working with to come up and surface that plan, be able to yield parts of it away and be like, you're right, that doesn't work, this doesn't work. And so for all of them to come together, I think that really relied on Andy to say, hey, this is how I think it can be, but I'm willing to iron this all out with you guys.
And I think it came at the perfect time because we've seen Sam and Genevieve specifically be people who aren't necessarily willing to go along with other people's plans throughout the game. And again, it's because of the position they were in, right? It almost was a role reversal of Andy, you know, following people around this whole game because he had to, and Sam and Genevieve at different times in the game leading what they wanted to happen. It sort of speaks to something that we talked about, I mentioned a little bit last week, is that especially in the new era, you make big moves too early, you make yourself too much of a threat somehow too early, and you're now all of a sudden on the bottom and people are scared of you. And it really, truly flipped here. Do you think Sam was being intentional strategically about who he selected?
It really didn't feel like it. No, it just felt like, you know, I'm going to be out of here. I'm going to pick my boy Andy because I said I would before and I'm going to try and stick to it. I really thought it would have been smart of Sam to pick anyone but Genevieve and Andy.
Definitely Genevieve. That was the one I disagreed with at the time. Shows what I know.
Yeah, like, because at least that gives Genevieve the chance to, like, sow dissent in the camp, gives him the chance to, like, make his play to, like, a teeny I thought that would be the way more sort of obvious move you can make. Do you think that Sam and Genevieve were surprised that Andy came out swinging like that?
My guess is anytime you go to the sanctuary, anytime you go somewhere else with a group of people, there's almost this expectation that you're going to talk game, and at least the guise of working together, whether somebody intends to or not. So that part, I don't think they were probably surprised by, but I think everybody was probably surprised by not just that he wanted to flip, not just that he had a plan, but he had a master plan. It's not so much the idea was hard to believe that it could work, or we could get a flip. It was that every single, like you said, detail of it had to be chiseled out and worked to perfection. And that's what you rarely see on Survivor, is the acting jobs across many people all coming together. That's the most impressive part, because there have arguably been just as impressive, if not more impressive, you know, numerical strategic flips in the new era. But for it to require this much qualitative work, the theatrics, the lying, the convincing, who of the three did you think stood out to give the best
performance? Andy was a linchpin, right? And they did a really good like compilation of it, of him going to each person being like, you know, they were whining and dining me, and they just wanted me to turn. I was so annoyed by it. And like, he sold the story to everyone. He also had to already have the social capital to be comfortable with those people and like make the lie sound believable. And he also had to work the split without causing suspicions, which I thought he blew it. Like right before they went to tribal, I was like, there was no way they're going to buy this.
Why did you think that he blew it?
I just thought they were going to sense something was up with it. I don't know. I am just surprised the whole thing went down.
It's not shocking that Andy was able to convince his alliance, quote, his alliance of the four girls to split the vote. Again, none of it actually strategically is that surprising. It's the acting jobs. And it's the fact that the four of them without Andy were so gung-ho, we got this, and seemingly impenetrable. I think Andy did a great job. I think Sam probably had the least active part to play in this. I was specifically actually very impressed with Genevieve's acting throughout. Andy did a great job. I think Genevieve was actually the key to this. There was a conversation that she had with Teenie in the woods where she flashes the idol to Teenie, and then they talk a little bit more later, and Teenie goes, where's the note that you had with the idol? And Genevieve says, I had to bury it on the beach. Why do you think I was down there by the water all morning? And that was the one moment that I thought it could have all fallen apart. I was surprised that Teenie fell for that. I really was, because Genevieve has burned Teenie endlessly throughout the game. And so that was the moment that I was like, will that work? I've thought about scenarios in my head, if I'm out there previously to this episode, where I'm like, could I convince somebody I fake have an idol? Where's the note is always the problem with that plan. So for Genevieve to get away with it without a note, that's the part that really impresses me the most.
Yeah, I agree. They even kept it up during tribal council, right? Sam is like, you should play it. And she's like, I'm good regardless of what happens. Like, and like, they still played it up. So now they still think Genevieve has the idol that's fake. Genevieve did more than carry her weight on the heist.
And I think it's not that Sam didn't, he just had the least part to play, but that moment of him, and I don't, you know what? I want to know if that was specifically chiseled into the plan too, because that's some next level thinking. Of all the things that actually happened, that's the one that blew my mind the most, that when I was watching it, I was like, why are they saying this? Like, even I didn't absorb it in the moment when Sam goes, do it, Genevieve. I don't know if that was an audible he called or what, if they had planned it, but that was brilliant acting on Sam's part specifically. That was his shining moment.
This is also a unique circumstance where, like, you never get to see something like this because you never get three players who get this much alone time to actually carve out a plan like this, right? Usually it's like, oh, let's come up with a plan hidden behind the bush or something like that. They must have gotten into those details. If I think they had, like, what, 12 hours, maybe more than that? I have to imagine, because Genevieve's a lawyer. Andy's an AI researcher, right? They would have gotten into like the nitty gritty details of like, well, what happens with the fake idol at the thing? Like, they would have played it out.
And I don't want to leave Sam out of this, but to me, it feels like Andy and Genevieve probably were the headstrong ones on here's every detail. And Sam, it was all because of him. Ultimately, it really was. You know, they don't get this opportunity if Sam doesn't pick them, mentor or not. So don't want to discredit him. You're not a Big Brother guy, and I don't know how many people listening are Big Brother fans, but I will say very briefly that this Operation Italy on Survivor is the closest thing that I have seen to Dan's funeral. And it makes a lot of sense too. Had time away from the game, convinced people that were impenetrable before. It shows that when you do have time alone from camp, anything can really happen. And I will say in the new era, I haven't been the biggest fan of The Sanctuary. I've always been a fan of like going on an older Survivor, the cool trips, and The Sanctuary itself just hasn't felt like, it's felt a little bit of a dud to me over the first, you know, seven seasons of the new era. But now that you've got people seeing what can happen there, I hope in the future, if The Sanctuary stays, it becomes this hub of let's make a big move. Let's make a huge game-changing move, because there hasn't been one like this in a very long time, if not ever. All this being said, this was a great move to watch. Was it actually a great move for Andy's game? Because now I perceive him as a huge target. Yes, if he gets to the end, maybe he's got a little bit of a chance more to win, but not even that necessarily, because now he may have pissed off a lot of people too. So was this actually a great move for Andy's game?
I think it is, because when they were in The Sanctuary, you know, his alliance was talking about how they're going to get Andy out. And, you know, you could also say like, well, of course they were saying that. But I truly believe that that group of folks would be like, yeah, of course I want to get rid of Andy. I think Andy saw it appropriately. Saw like, yeah, even if Sam and Genevieve get out, then I'm definitely like the next one there. What can I do now to change that situation and prevent that from happening in a couple of votes? It was definitely a Hail Mary, but I think it was a Hail Mary that he had to make to get even a chance of getting to the final three.
Yeah, and if he gets there maybe before this, even though he's getting the heavy edit, like maybe he's not getting the win. In the previous episode before this, he presents his math equation with debatable whether that was actually correct or not.
I don't think it was.
No, I think there's a lot of variables beyond what he was perceiving. But that was a perfect example of him, I'm just thinking about the numbers, and everybody else is sort of thinking about the qualitative factors. They're not really listening to him. We're getting the sense as viewers that he's not being fully respected in what he wants to do. Now he's got people's, at least on a game level, respect. And I get that is a great game move for him to have a shot at the win, which ultimately that's what you want to do, right? I respect it. But do you actually think that now people on that jury, if he gets to the final three, are going to want for him to win? They may be able to say that was a great game move, but do you think that this that he just pulled after already, as he admitted, lying to people previously, will people now want him to win because of this?
It really comes down to if Sam or Genevieve get kicked to the jury and they tell them what happened and they go into like the detail. Most of them are all Survivor fans, right? They're going to be like, this is crazy what we just did and got away with it. They're going to tell them. Andy made that happen in a very intricate, thought out, planned out way. Like he laid the groundwork for the outwitting. So I think that's it. Like, that's the only way. Otherwise, I don't think the rest of the people on that jury have seen all the things that we've seen that would indicate like Andy is really playing a pretty solid social game. I think we saw an episode or two ago. He is going and talking to everyone and making a bunch of relationships. I thought that might be like the downfall of him, but maybe he's not like committing really heavy to everyone. If Sam or Genevieve can sort of validate that this was actually an epic move by Andy, then maybe some folks from the jury will be like, okay, you know what? We have to give Andy his flowers. He deserves this.
We've seen when the move happened, Saul whispers to the jury, that was Andy. Andy flipped again is what he said. Andy flipped again. So obviously this jury thinks of Andy as a flipper, despite the fact that flippers always win.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily within the game for the people who've already been voted out, usually seen as a positive attribute. If it was, they probably wouldn't have called him a flipper, because that has a negative connotation to it up until this podcast was created. But Andy is the flipper, and it seems like he is all of a sudden always winning. We saw at the very end of the episode when Caroline has her final words to the camera, she was impressed by Andy's move, at least in that moment. She said it was a good move by Andy. The original move was meant to get Rachel out, and that's Andy's biggest problem right now. And that's everybody's biggest problem right now, is Rachel in the game. Let's say that Rachel and Andy somehow get to the final two. I don't think it matters who they're with at this point. If they're both in the final two together, that will be a case study, I believe, in where we're at in Survivor. Are we at the point where the person who probably everybody feels the best about, and also to Rachel's credit, has made plenty of big moves, has been in it, does the person that people feel the best about win, or does the person who really truly has been manipulating people for weeks and made what is going to be the biggest move of the season, is that person going to get the win? And where do you think this jury right now is at with that premise?
this jury does not know that Rachel has a blocker vote and that she has an immunity idol. And she's going to play both of those things, right, in the next two votes. Those two actions will certainly sort of put some shade on top of the light that's on Andy's game right now. She's also won two immunities, right? I actually think it is still Rachel's game to lose. Andy, yeah, he's gotten this far by doing some good social gameplay, but like he hasn't really competed in like the immunity challenges that I don't really think he's won. He hasn't won anything, right? No. With the immunity stuff, with her social play, with the idol and the blocker vote, I think she's much more well-rounded in the eyes of the jury than Andy is.
I agree with that. And that's why, you know, I said in the intro, I think unless something unprecedented happens or she loses in fire, Rachel has a cakewalk to win this game right now. Every time we think something's sure in Survivor, it flips the other way, right? So like that's definitely not 100% locked in just yet, despite her block vote, despite her idol, despite her, you know, propensity for winning challenges, something could go wrong. You brought up a really good point. Sam and Genevieve, if they get to the jury, even one of them gets to the jury, that's a person who could sing Andy's praises about Operation Italy. But what if Andy realizes this and Andy's next move is to, I got to get Sam and or Genevieve onto the jury. Now, if he flips on them, are they bitter, right? Can you be bitter if you're Sam and Genevieve towards a guy who saved your game, but then takes you out right afterwards?
I think they have to give him credit. You know, if you've been watching this game for as long as all of them, I imagine, have been, like, they have to recognize that's possible. They don't have the control, and he helped them, right? And then he did the next thing he had to do to save his game, which is get rid of him. I do think you have to respect it some. You know, as we watch all these past seasons and we watch the final jury votes, it's always interesting to see how much emotion clouds like the judgment. I just can't see. Well, actually, no. I guess I could see that everyone just hating Andy, right? Does that happen in the past? Like, are there people who are like, oh yeah, this person probably should win, but then they were just so personally disliked?
All the time, especially if they were outwardly lying to them. And I think, you know, one thing that Andy's got going for him is that every move that he's been a part of, he's pretty much actively taking credit for, from the pre-merge to now. He says that when Caroline leaves this time, I'll explain. So not only does the jury see it, but now he's led an opening to him going back to camp and telling everybody about it. So now it's not just necessarily that Sam and Genevieve who can go sing his praises to the jury. If he truly goes back to camp and explains it to everybody, now everybody knows what he did. So even if it's somebody else who goes back, even if they're pissed at him, the jury's going to ask him, what was that all about?
I think he'll be honest about it too, right? I think he'll be like, I just saw the numbers. Like, I saw that how the way this game was going to unfold against me. I could see him being like, can you guys tell me that while we were at Sanctuary, you guys did not talk about the order in which you were going to vote me off? You can't say that. And so he's perfectly justified in what he did. Like, that's the other part of this. Like, it's not like a backstab, because they were already planning on backstabbing him. He did the right thing.
He did do the right thing. I think the key for him, regardless of who's on the jury, first of all, I think if Rachel's there, I think Rachel's winning.
Yeah.
I think we can kind of both agree on that. So this, and it's likely she's going to be there. So this may be a completely moot point, but if he's at the end without Rachel specifically, or maybe possibly with Rachel, who knows, the biggest thing that I think has to happen for him is for him to have flipped Sierra back onto his side, because Sierra has been there the longest and she was particularly screwed over by Andy after she went out of her way to save him in this game at the pre-merge, right? And I think we can infer, especially from when Saul said, that's Andy, he flipped again. I think we can infer that Sierra's probably pretty pissed at Andy. So if whether it's Sam coming to the jury and convincing her or some other way, if he can get Sierra, who has been there the longest, everybody's probably looking to on some level as the Queen of Ponderosa, to soften against him potentially, that might be the biggest thing that he needs to flip into his favor. Because here's the thing about Rachel, as great as her game seems on paper, she's gotten very lucky actually in a lot of situations. Some of them were by her own play, like this past time she wins immunity. She didn't know she was going, but had she not won immunity, it would have been her, but she did that. But Saul saved her in the game. Saul absolutely saved her in the game when she was with Tuku. You know, she was left behind at the vote when Sierra took out Annika at the pre-merge. Sierra knows that. Sam knows that. She was left behind at the vote when Sierra went out. So she hasn't played a perfect game. And we'll see how she utilizes these powers later. And I think I know the answer to this next question. The show at least is showing a transformation of Andy. I think the show is probably trying to convince us more than Andy's even trying to convince us that he has transformed as a person throughout this game. Do you still perceive him as like a game bot who purely thinks in numbers and is ignoring the social ramifications? Or do you think that he has actually baked into account, I think I can get away with this socially and people will be okay with it?
He's turned on like the social part of his game. You know, even the social part of the game, it should be like a game bot, like a calculation. Like you're talking to someone, you're just making a judgment on like, how does it feel today with them? And how does it feel the next day, right? And how do I slowly every day or every conversation add something to build trust? I'm sure he's doing that too. I bet this entire time with every one of his conversations, he's been fairly calculated in what he's saying to people. There's also still part of me that I think so, like, if he was this cult, like, calculating from this whole middle part of the show, is there a chance that the meltdown at the beginning was also like a calculated thing? Did he come on and be like, yeah, I'm going to position myself as like a victim and do something crazy like that? And maybe he leaned into it some.
Somebody brought it up before. My perception of it is that he genuinely was having a hard time out there the first couple of days. Then at that challenge, especially when he was on the mat, I think there may have been a chance that maybe he had a realization, like, I have one play right here, and it's to really own how much of a victim and point this publicly on somebody else. Now, I'm not willing to definitely give him that credit. Probably more of a chance it was just him losing his mind. But you're right. Given his ability to be so calculated and cunning and use what he has built to flip it onto one big move, I don't think it's out of the question to say that that was an act.
I guess he's grown as a player, right? Because he's leaned into the social stuff. I don't know. It was like episode two. Like, he's just been, okay, how do I make my maneuver and manipulate the next person, which I appreciate that he is living vote to vote.
Yeah, we don't see that as much the way that he's pretty boldly, outwardly saying it like this in the new era. We don't see people necessarily saying, like, I'm just like running through people and that's my strategy. And to hell with the actual ramifications socially, even though he is building solid relationships before he makes these moves. I think a lot of people in the new era especially are getting caught up in, you know, I got to make sure that people like me at the end. And maybe part of the reason that he's not doing that is because he felt such like an outcast, not just at the beginning of this game, but like in life. You know, he's talked about he didn't really have many friends growing up. When that happens to a person, sometimes you have a viewpoint towards people where they treated me poorly. I'm just going to treat them the same way that they treated me. And I'm not going to really think about it too much. And we'll see what happens at the end. And I don't think that he can really be blamed for that. He was an outcast in life. And at the beginning of this game, people were making fun of him on this podcast and on the show. And good for him for getting his revenge.
He also knows for a fact that if he does go to final three, and if he was going to, the jury was going to vote for him, they're not voting for him because they like him. He knows that they're voting for him because of all the moves that he made. His real only choice then is to just lean into that and just make as many like great calculated moves that show that he understood what was going on in this game. He understood where he was positioned and that he had like the patience and the sort of the confidence in himself to execute some move to save himself and go to the next thing. Because that's the only story for him right now.
If he can own the story, if he can own the I'm not the best socially, but I improved there and all the while I did exactly what I wanted to do, I think that goes a long way. It goes further with somebody who was great socially and still manipulated people. And people truly felt burned by like, oh, this was somebody who didn't have to do this. Because, you know, Andy can almost play this underdog story of I wasn't given a chance, but I took my chance. Right. And it's believable because it's true. So I think that he's got that going for him. And we'll see if people are willing to accept it. Is Andy the new era Tony?
Yeah, like soft Tony. Yeah. Yes, I kind of think so. Like, at least definitely on his willingness to go back and forth and work every single relationship he had, you know, to get to the next round and to save himself. Absolutely. Tony did it with a little bit more, I'd say, like glee. I don't know if maliciousness is the right word, but like Tony definitely enjoyed, you know, when he got the flip on someone. And Andy was just like, I'm just trying to make sure this thing works. You know, maybe Tony had a little more confidence in his moves that he was making. But like the strategy is still the same. You got to work the numbers in your favor to get to the next round. Now, Tony was still hustling out there. I think harder than Andy has been. Like Tony definitely showed a little bit more grit around like hunting for idols and like really assertively trying to work people where Andy just passively did it.
Yeah. And to your point about the only thing I can even slightly disagree with there is we did see some maliciousness out of Andy.
Yeah.
We saw it with the Annika vote. He was so happy with that one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And Sierra and Sam for that matter. But I get what you're saying. Like Tony, I think just as a person comes off a little bit more that way versus Andy. But outside of the Cliff vote, that felt a little weird to me. But it felt like he was just purely paranoid, whereas Andy was like, I know what I'm doing for my game and I'm doing it out of vengeance in a way. But yeah, like Tony just as a person more confident than Andy. So it feels like he's owning his moves more, whether or not that's true. But yeah, they're using the numbers. They're flipping the game in their numbers. We've talked about a winner pick with you. It's Rachel. Can't have a conversation about Survivor with Flip without talking about a winner. Can't win pick. Real quick, who's your can't win pick? One word.
Sue.
That sucks, but it might be true. Thank you, Ashwin, for coming on. I appreciate you and have fun watching the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As previously mentioned, we have no sponsorships on this podcast. So, in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about the men's multi-daily multivitamin. I'm not sure why there's double multis, which is kind of redundant in itself. But they are blackberry and strawberry flavored. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm now 30. So I should probably take one of these right now. I haven't done it yet today. I'm opening them up and we're going to take two. And we're chewing them. And they taste about as good as a vitamin can. The men's multi-daily multivitamin. Time to start taking them.
My ears just popped. Oh, I think I'm okay. The right one's still not popped. Okay.
Do you need a second?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. Well, she's back. She's beautiful. She's bonkers. She's Bajulia. And this is the final deep dive based upon social media of Survivor 47 on Flippers Always Win. Julia, how's it going?
Well, Flip, doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. It's pretty crazy that this is the final installment of this segment. It just seems like yesterday that we were sort of saying we don't love Teenie on episode one, and she's been pretty good, solid since then, up until this episode. And so,
yeah. And, you know, I felt bad about my coverage of Teenie for a second there. I was like, oh, maybe I should review her again, give her a second go. And then just pissed me off again.
So we're not doing it.
No, I like Teenie. I do like, I've come along. Teenie has come a long way in my book. I think she came off very strong in the beginning, especially the first episode. You know, I don't know if they gave her, honestly, a very fair edit the first episode. They really, like, played up her quirkiness.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's really what she's like. Once she calmed down,
yeah,
she wasn't like that at all. So my assessment of her, I don't think, was really that fair. But I don't like the path that she's currently on.
No, and for the record, I also felt bad about your assessment of Teenie. pinning all the blame on you. I like Teenie too. I think that everybody out there pretty much likes Teenie. You know, she's sort of short-circuiting. She's the youngest one out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I can understand the emotional breakdown. It's amazing that more people don't get to that point with the hunger and just everything out there. So
100%. I would be sobbing every day. You know, I also wouldn't put myself in that position. I have no interest in being on Survivor. But I am surprised that it doesn't happen more often.
And maybe it does, and it doesn't always get shown. You know, there's a lot more to Teenie's game than just the emotion. And but that's what the editors are going with, because right. it's entertaining.
Right. And I think they're setting us up for this head to head between her and Rachel.
Between Teenie and Rachel.
Yes.
Interesting. See, it feels like to me, maybe it's just because it's been this way the whole time, that it's Teenie and Genevieve butting heads and Genevieve getting the best of her every time.
Right. And I think that Teenie feels very betrayed by Genevieve. In Teenie's mind, they had a strong bond, and Genevieve betrayed Teenie with the Saul vote. Genevieve also betrayed us with the Saul vote. This household loves Saul. But Genevieve has been very open about why she is keeping people at an arm's length and not wanting to form strong emotional bonds and keeping it strictly as a game. And I don't think Teenie was on the same page, and that really hurt Teenie. But in looking at the preview for this coming episode, I think there's going to be some sort of showdown between Rachel and Teenie.
Interesting. I haven't heard that one before. I don't think it's wrong. You know, one clue to it could be in this past episode where Genevieve says, you know, if Rachel's at the end with you, I would potentially vote for Rachel. And Teenie takes like a lot of offense to that. Maybe could that possibly be Teenie's signal now that this whole big Operation Italy has gone down? I don't know why that would influence Teenie necessarily to say she has to flip on Rachel, but she should realize that Rachel's the biggest threat out there, because she is.
Right. I'm shocked that I feel like no one besides Genevieve sees it.
You know, part of it is, and I think Ashwin mentioned it a little bit, is that they don't know that Rachel has an idol. And right. yeah, that's going to be a big move when she breaks that out, especially if she's able to use it to save herself.
Right.
It's interesting that you see it being Teenie pitted against Rachel. I feel like a lot of people feel like it's Genevieve versus Rachel. Genevieve has outwardly said, I have no friends out here. And as I said in my intro, I don't think you can win this game intentionally making no friends, no matter how well you played. So I don't think that Genevieve has a chance to win, really. She's the type of player who, as a viewer, we're like, that person could have a great chance to win the game. We might want to see her. When you're out there and somebody was like, I made no effort with you, and my sole purpose was just to try to get you out, you're not going to want that person to win.
I don't know if it's that she's making no effort. It's not like she's sitting around camp not talking to anyone, not interacting with anyone. I think she's just not opening herself up to close bonds, which I think is a disadvantage in the game. I think that part of how you get through Survivor is through the close bonds that you form. It's, at the end of the day, a very social game. But I don't think she's being like cold and miserable and, you know, rude to people. I don't think that's the case. No. I think she's just not being warm and lovey and all that.
Yeah. With Ashwin, we asked the question, is Andy the new era Tony? So if that's a yes, then is Genevieve the new era Cass?
Huh.
I mean, very different. When we say new era, as Ashwin immediately said, so you mean soft.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we mean. Not just the fact that it's 20 seasons later, that it's a softer, nicer version. But ultimately, you know, Andy to Tony, people who will flip any chance they get, strictly numbers, use their strategy moves to get themselves to the end and don't care who's in their way. You know, Genevieve to Cass. Yeah, a woman who wasn't lovey-dovey, like you said. A woman who Cass was. Wasn't she a lawyer?
Yeah, I believe
she's a lawyer. Yeah. Genevieve's a lawyer. You know, a very strategic, flip on you, make a move whenever I want, chaotic sort of player. I think there's a comparison. I really do, actually. Sam's like Spencer.
Yeah, I see that.
I think Spencer was a little more, yeah, because they were both on the outs. They both were like the young guys. They weren't necessarily getting what they wanted strategically, but they kept on going.
I like both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. You did like Spencer.
I really liked Spencer.
You don't really know what he's been up to these days. Well, I think I mentioned
now
it.
Now I do. Opened my eyes and that makes me not thrilled.
You liked Spencer. You don't like Ryman.
Yes. Yes. I forgot there was a name change involved.
And look, we're not saying that Survivor 47 is comparable to Cagayan. Obviously, Cagayan, I think, is one of the top handful of seasons. And 47's a real good one. It's not quite at that level. But I think the comparisons are there. The only difference game-wise is that Kageyan did not have a Rachel. And that is who we are here to talk about today. She's been your winner pick from the beginning. She's been many people on this podcast's winner pick, either from the beginning or throughout. I always felt like she was a real contender, but I just felt like she would get got at some point. But now it seems really hard to fathom how that happens unless Teenie flips. And I don't think Teenie will flip. So our deep dive based upon social media today is our consensus winner pick going into the final two episodes, Rachel. What do you got on Rachel Lamont?
So Rachel's Instagram is all Survivor. It seems like maybe she just cleaned all of her social media out when she got on the show, because it kind of starts right before the season started. She started doing some promo for Survivor. Overall, her Instagram isn't super in-depth. You know, she's done some meetups. She posts some stills from the episodes. Aww, that's sad. There's a post of her and Annika finishing a puzzle in a challenge. That feeling when you and Bestie lock it in. Rip Annika.
You know, I want to throw one thing in there about Annika, actually. After she got eliminated, I saw that she did some interview, and whoever the winner is was mentioned to her, like, you know, do you know who the winner is? And maybe this was just a fake out from her, but she said, yeah, I know who the winner is. And she seemed really annoyed by it, which is actually part of the reason I haven't told anybody this. Part of the reason I felt like it hasn't been Rachel this whole time. Because unless she's just faking it, that implies it would not be Rachel, because they were besties out there. That implies to me that it's like Andy or Sam.
Yeah, but I feel like Annika is for the drama.
Yeah.
And so I feel like she might be faking it. One of her captions is a Taylor Swift.
Okay.
It's when they did the, like, the House of Cards challenge.
Yeah.
And the caption is, I cry a lot, but I am so productive. It's an art. Taylor Swift.
Which is interesting, because we really haven't seen her have any sort of emotional breakdown out there. She's been pretty much like a rock.
Yeah, she's very stoic. She seems very logical. Like, even thinking back to, what was it, the first episode when Andy's having his anxiety moment in the middle of the night, and she was supportive. She was nice to him in that moment, but she didn't really show much emotion at all.
Yeah, she was supportive and also like, let's not do this right now.
Right.
Which is probably the right way to play it. I don't know how much Andy appreciated it at the time, but that was best for her game. And then we've got Rachel's Twitter, which she's a little bit more active on. She's very snarky. Her profile picture on Twitter is the snapshot of her trying to steal the rice at that challenge and put it in her back pocket. That's her profile picture, which is hysterical to me. Yeah, her captions on here are pretty snarky. She said balls two or three times with photos of various challenges that involve balls. So that's fun. This one's fun. It was from two episodes ago when she was on the dock in the middle of the ocean trying to solve that balls puzzle. Again, other with balls. She actually retweeted this one. This was not her, but she retweeted, if I send you this, it means things are about to get crazy. It's just a picture of her looking at the camera on the dock, looking all mischievous and such. I also personally saw her like snap back at some quote unquote Survivor expert who had thought she wasn't going to get through the episode or didn't think she was doing that well. She sort of snapped back at him on Twitter. I appreciated that. So she's snarky on here. And I like snarky on Twitter. That's really what Twitter is supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's the place for it, for sure.
Don't really see how she loses if she gets to the final three, unless there's like mad respect for Andy's game. Even then, I still see her having a better social argument than he does.
Right. And I mean, Andy has this big move now on his resume. But other than that, they're pretty even strategy-wise, I'd say, up to this point. And so if she pulls off a big move with her idol or with her block vote, that puts them on an even playing field again, I think, in my eyes.
Yeah, and she's got two immunities. She could easily get at least one more, if not multiple more.
Right.
They each have their weak moments in the game. They both have gotten very lucky at different times. They both have relied on other people to save them multiple times. I'm rooting for them to both get to the end together because that will be very, very interesting. All right, so we're going to do a celebrity comparison, as we always do in this segment. But this time, for the very last segment of the season here, we're going to flip it up or switch it up. I'm going to come up with the celebrity and Julia's going to guess.
That was so lame.
I know. So lame. Ask your questions away if you need any help. I'll give you the hints that I can.
Yeah, I feel like I usually give you a hint.
But I have to ask you the type of question like...
No, I feel like I just usually give you a hint.
No, I ask.
Okay, is it a live person?
Neither.
Neither what? That was just one question.
Well, okay, so I guess... Okay, all right, let me... Okay. It's not a celebrity. It's a lookalike. It's, you know, kind of in the same way that Sue's was Charlotte Pickles and Kyle's was Shaggy.
So it's a cartoon.
It is a cartoon. So I guess technically this is not a...
So it's not a live person. It is a cartoon.
But it's also not a dead person either.
Oh, my God.
It's a cartoon. You could have just asked if it was a cartoon or not.
Okay, so it's a cartoon. What time period?
Our childhood.
What network was this on?
Nickelodeon.
From the 90s?
No, our childhood, the early 2000s.
I mean, we were alive in the 90s, too.
I always forget you're a year older, so your references are different than mine. 93 versus 94.
You don't remember the 90s?
I remember them, but not all that much. My reference points generally start 2000 and on.
I have no idea.
It is, of course, Tootie. From the Fairly Odd Parents, the girl who had the big crush on Timmy that was always getting ignored.
I do not agree with this at all.
Shocking, because we agree on every other comparison.
I'm not seeing it.
You're not seeing it at all, huh?
Not at all.
Huh.
I mean, she has dark hair.
And glasses.
Yeah. Sure. Honestly, I think she looks more like
Trixie Tang. She kind of looks like a combination of Trixie and Tootie.
I feel like she looks like Trixie with glasses. I feel like the only thing that is similar between Tootie and Rachel is that they both have glasses.
I mean, Rachel doesn't have braces, so that's one that doesn't. And she doesn't wear her hair in little pigtails that actually aren't attached to her head.
Yeah, that's weird. I've never noticed that before.
I think she looks like a combination of Trixie and Tootie.
Okay.
I think that's fair. Because she doesn't look like Trixie 100%, but she also doesn't look like Tootie 100%. You put them together, I think there's something there.
Okay, this one's a stretch.
This is the pot calling the kettle black. How many times do I have to rehash the Gabe Adrian Grenier?
I stand by it.
You shouldn't.
Well...
You should not.
This is a hill I'll die on.
You've never met a hill you wouldn't die on.
That is true.
You're like, oh, look, a hill. Let me go die there. Thanks, Julia, for coming on. You've been great all season. Final thoughts from you. What have you learned about yourself from doing this segment? You know, you're not a particularly talkative person by nature, but you've come on and you've really done a great job and you've really given a lot of insight. So what have you learned about yourself by doing this segment over the course of this season?
I don't know.
Upstate New York's connection there between you and Rudy.
And I'll leave you with that.
You are an old man. And I love you.
Aww.
And that is a wrap on episode 12 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to Ashwin for his second featured guest appearance on this show. Thank you to Julia, as always, for her deep dive based upon social media. We will be back for episode 13, the penultimate episode, next week. I'm super looking forward to seeing how this plays out. I know you are too. Signing off for now, your host Flip, and if I had a tagline, I would say it now.